It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
I assume that's all the listeners that are left are the Tony William shippers.
Probably.
Like the diehards. Everybody else has moved on. Yeah. We don't have a lot of fan fiction, which I got to admit, I'm a little disappointed.
Well,
in.
If you ever find any, don't even tell me about it. Don't even tell me about it.
Speaking of which, I finally finished first season of Supernatural.
Oh, okay.
And I was a little surprised because it ended on a ridiculously huge cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, wait, this was like 2004. When everything ended. That was back when we all thought J.J. Abrams was a genius. And so every goddamn thing ended on a huge cliffhanger.
Yep. Pretty much.
It is tricky, though, dealing with the show and knowing how long it goes and all the supernatural elements. Spoiler alert, the show Supernatural has supernatural things in it. So, like, there's this actress in it, and I'm like, she looks familiar. I want to, like, look her up or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm hesitant to do it because she's an antagonist. And I don't know how long she's an antagonist.
Yeah, right. Because they always say, oh, she was in the show from this to this. It's like, oh,
exactly.
Great.
I'm
so
like, oh, crap. So I'm like, I guess I can't look her up until she dies. Which sounds weird.
Yep.
Oh, there's a lot of... I mean, I don't even want to go... Toxic is a strong word, but, like, whatever toxic masculinity was when it was a little kid, there's a lot of that in Supernatural.
Yeah. Especially with Dean.
We have... Well, except what's weird is the first episode of the second season is all about the opposite, like...
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
For once, that's not... And that was actually fun. Near the end of the first season... We did a lot of characters realizing what was important to them in both good and bad ways.
Sure.
But it finally made the characters more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and I'm like, oh my God, I need a break from the what's more important to you, revenge or family debate.
Well.
Because approximately every two episodes, two people with the last name Winchester have that debate. And frequently, they were on the exact opposite sides of that debate the previous time.
Yeah.
Well, and it's getting tiresome.
Well, wait till there's 10 seasons of it.
15.
Yeah, right.
Fifth fucking teen. Is
Which is another
is
reason
coming.
Why some people stop watching, because, like I say, for the first six seasons or so, there's other things going on, so it doesn't bother you. But after a while, it's like, this is the only thing that happens in this show, is this argument over and over and over again, so you stop watching.
Recently, the car got totaled.
Oh, okay.
And there was a debate
I wonder how often
over whether or not to save it. And I was like, no. I never watched this show, but I know that car is a fucking icon of this show. If it got destroyed at the end of the first season, I don't feel like it would have mattered that much.
Yeah, right.
So I'm like, yeah, we're definitely keeping the car. It's funny how those little things can slip in. We're stuck right now. We're going to see Black Klansman this weekend.
Oh, okay.
And it's very tricky because even just like headlines and photos like on AV Club and stuff, already little things give it away.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, God damn it. Now, so far, there's nothing that I've been like, oh, I knew that. Like, there was nothing that I'm like, oh, my God. But it's still stuff that I'm like,
Right.
I get because Trisha's been really nervous. She's like, I want to see it quick. People are talking about it too much. Things are going to be given away. And I'm like, I don't feel like there's a lot of spoilers for it, but there's some stuff. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that has been referred to as QVC without all the pesky shopping. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 388.
And Craig, I upped the main volume again, so hopefully we'll see. We're getting that things are nice and balanced between us, but we are still significantly quieter than the intro and outro.
I thought that was fixed.
So I'm working on that. Craig could be a liar. I don't
know.
He's foreign.
I listened through these headphones that maybe, I don't know, and then I have to turn it up anyway. So
because you're old?
No. I guess I don't know if I have to turn it up more than... If I was listening over speakers, I think I'd have a different opinion. But since it's headphones, I just naturally think that I have to turn, you know, if I turn it up, then that just means that I had it turned down too low. It doesn't occur to me to think.
No, it's mostly if you have to change it.
Oh.
If you find a good volume for the intro, and then when we start talking, you have to change it.
Yeah, I don't. That's not right. But a lot of times I'll start it before it's on my head, and I'll be doing something
because
else.
Because you don't care about that intro, because you've
intro.
Heard it a thousand
yeah,
times.
Right.
Also, you're old. So.
Yeah, and I am old. That's right.
Okay, for those of you just joining us now, this should be a two-parter if I don't fucking delete it. So I'm only going to explain this in this part. Here's how the show goes. We have Hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves, cool people, awesome people, sexy people, kind, loving people.
Yeah.
Write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes. Little comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat magically on its own transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its servants, draw note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show except the parts that aren't, which is most of it. You keep looking over there. Twiglet just finally made it to that tonight.
Oh.
Or today, I guess. So, yeah, for those of you who can't see what we're talking about, so all of you, we got a new cat tower. Mostly because someone, almost certainly Addy, but we technically weren't here to witness it, broke it. Broke the old one because it was like plastic. And so they broke the top off of it. And so we had to get a new one, and Monday it arrived, and Monday night, the producer, with the help of the two kids next door, built it. It took a very long time, and the cats have sort of wanted nothing to do with it, and then a couple days ago, Addy finally got into it, and now he's the king of it, and he's frequently on it, like he sleeps on there and stuff now, but just today when we came home, Twiglet was finally getting on it. Ezzy still hasn't gone near it. Is Twiglet trying to get up on the top or what? I can't quite see from
no,
where.
No, but Gus is like reaching down and.
Yeah, he likes to mess.
Anyway.
Yes, we just got that, and you also saw the box there. Yeah, the new TV has arrived. I dealt with tech support from Sharp, and they helped me locate the model number. And then they had me try something that I had tried before. But to be fair, it was a slightly different button combination. Because that's the thing with all of these. Is basically, unplug the TV, hold down these buttons on the TV, plug it back in.
Yeah.
And I will admit, the button combination they had me try was different than all the other ones we had tried. But it also did not work. And they're like, yeah, you're going to have to take that in for repair. Mm. And we're like, yeah, we don't know about that. And also, the nearest repair place is an hour away.
Mm-hmm.
And TVs are way cheaper than they were when that one got purchased.
Right, right.
So this thing cost a quarter of what that one cost.
Wow.
It's bigger. It's 4K.
Wow.
It has a bunch of things I don't understand. It's a smart TV. Like, you plug the Ethernet into it, and, like, you can do all your apps and stuff on there.
Wow.
Has a remote you can talk to. So I'm pretty excited.
So the government and anyone else can spy on you through your TV now.
Yeah, same as with your cell phone.
Yeah, I'm really happy about that.
How is the cell phone working out for you?
Well, I just got the case today.
Ooh.
And put it all together. It came with a glass
screen thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To put on there.
Did you get that on okay? Those are tricky frequently.
It was tricky.
Do them at the place.
But my wife helped and things, and it's on
no
there.
Bubbles.
Just no bubbles, as far as nice. I know. I can't see any. So I just did that before I came over here. And then, so my wife asked me, well, are you going to take the phone with you then? I said, what for? And she said,
to live tweet the podcast.
She said, so I can text you while you're podcasting. I said, I'm not going to do that. And then she said, well, so you'll have it in the car in case of an emergency. That's the whole point. I said, oh, yeah,
that's
the point.
That's how she gets you.
That is the point. So then I took the phone. I had it upstairs. And I went downstairs, and I had to, I don't remember. I had to do something, so I set it down to do that. And then I forgot I set it down.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's still at home.
Well, we'll get you a lanyard. You can just put it around your neck.
A lanyard. Or a,
it'll work.
Or a, something to carry it with. Holster or something.
There you go.
So, yeah.
Pocket protector.
But I...
So you didn't take it to the state fair?
No, because I didn't have any protection for it.
Yeah. And so how was the state fair without a phone?
The same as always. I've never gone... Sense. I've never taken a phone to the state fair.
Makes sense.
Now, my wife had her phone and didn't mean anything because nobody really contacted us. We didn't really need it.
She didn't take no pictures?
Oh, yeah. She took pictures. Mm-hmm. But in previous years, she... just took a digital camera and took pictures.
Yes, but this way she could immediately post them to Instagram.
She doesn't have an
for
Instagram.
All her followers.
She doesn't have an Instagram
account.
Yeah,
give it a week.
Anyway, yeah, we went to the fair. And
except the kids call it Insta.
My aunt and uncle, as I've said, my mom had one brother, and he and his wife were visiting. I see him like every couple years or every 5 years, it seems like. I don't see him very often. So they went to the fair, too. My sister was ill, so she couldn't join us, unfortunately. But the two brothers I have that live...
That aren't in Alaska.
Came, which they don't usually do. I mean, usually when I go to the fair, it's just me and my wife. Last year, my sister went with us, and we thought, well, maybe we'll just keep doing this, right? It'll be the three of us will go, because my brothers...
But she had a terrible time, so she faked sick this year.
No, she was sick. Because we went over on Saturday, because we thought that was the only time we were going to see my uncle and aunt.
Yeah.
But then they came to the fair. I think if we thought we were going to see him at the fair anyway, we might have just gone to the fair on Sunday because we had to stay overnight, Saturday to Sunday. And we don't usually do that. We don't usually stay overnight over there. And we stayed with my sister. But we did have a good visit on Saturday. We went down to the farm, Dad's farm, and that was fun. Then we went to the fair, and that was good. But then I got sick at the fair.
Oh, dear.
Just the migraine kind of thing that I usually get. But, we had 2 hours to drive home, so that was miserable. And then I got home and went to bed. And after a few hours in bed, I was fine. But then I was wide awake in the middle of the night. So I missed I missed part of the fair. I mean, there were things that I didn't get to do because I got sick. But that happens, and it was really hot. I think the heat sort of...
Oh, there were a lot. We were really surprised when we went to Hy-Vee for our weekly shopping, and it was really kind of empty for the time of day and stuff. And I was asking him, I was like, why does it... He's like, the only thing I can think of is the fair's opening weekend.
Hmm. Well, it was busy. I mean, it was... I kind of thought with the heat... I mean, it's always hot at the fair, really.
August. I mean,
that's exactly right. So I thought...
We don't have a lot of cold Augusts.
But maybe there'll be fewer people. No, it was just packed. And
people who are into the state fair are committed.
Like myself.
Nobody's ever like, you know.
Well, and another...
Or, I mean, there are people like that. There are people like me, and we don't go.
Another thing, though, probably the reason my brothers went, and it was good for my uncle to be there, was, as I probably already explained... Sunday was my mom's birthday, and we bought a little memorial thing for her to put on the lamps.
Yes.
So we all went and saw that and took some pictures of it and stuff. So that was nice.
Posted them to Insta.
But yeah, every time I get to the fair, I'm so happy. It's like, it doesn't even matter what kind of mood I'm in before I get there. As soon as I'm on the grounds, I'm really happy. I get to the Ag building and I look at all the exhibits there, and it's really cool. And, that was great. And so we were there for a few hours.
You like a sanitized clean Ned Flanders-y version of that scene in Charlotte's Web with the rat singing the song about all the food left over.
I guess. I
feel like that, but instead of like rotten apple cores, it's children's 4-H projects.
Well, see, I didn't even get to see the 4-H projects this year. Because I do like going there and seeing that stuff.
I think you sound an awful lot like Charles Nason Reilly. So.
Yeah, I did get to the Ag Building. Was great. Usually I like to go to the Cultural Center and the 4-H Building, and I didn't get to that stuff. And I got, like I said, I got a headache, and I decided I needed to go. But still, we had a good time while we were there, and it was great to have family and stuff there. And Mom's, the little plaque type thing that's on the lamp was really cool. And so that was a good way to celebrate her birthday.
Yeah, I don't care about any of that. Here's what I care about. What was the weirdest food you saw this time?
The weirdest food?
Yes. State fairs in general, Iowa State Fair in particular, is known for every year somebody comes up with the latest whatchamacallit stuffed, deep fried on a stick bullshit going on.
Well,
like, what was the weirdest one?
I don't know, but I had something that I hadn't had before. My wife insisted I get it because there's a stand there that has vegetarian corn dogs.
Okay.
And they're really good. But that same stand also was selling deep fried peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Oh.
So she said, you know, I like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. So she said, you've got to get one of those. So I did. And it was pretty good, but it was really rich.
Whoa, yeah.
I mean, like I took a few bites and I felt really full.
But it tasted good. I'm guessing you don't eat a lot of like battered deep fried foods.
Not really.
They tend to be very heavy.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of the oil that is still in them.
Right. But it actually tasted pretty good.
I would bet that would be good.
Yeah, it tasted pretty good. But as far as...
Was it like a real sandwich? Because I could see them buying like those stupid Uncrustables or whatever and just deep frying it. But it was like a real sandwich?
No, it was... It was round, like a pocket type
yeah,
thing
yeah, yeah, yeah.
is what it was.
Was it pre-made?
I think so.
Yeah, no, I think you can get those in the freezer and then they just batter them and fry them, I guess. But that still sounds tasty.
It was.
But you can buy the innard... The non-battered version, just...
Oh, I see.
I think they're called Uncrustables because they have no crust around the edge.
No, it was good.
You know, bread crust, that lie my mother told me.
I wonder, though, if I would have had any trouble eating it if I hadn't eaten the corn dog right before that.
That can't help, yeah. Because I mean, I would have had no trouble eating both of them and then having dessert. But you don't eat like me. There are certain small nations that don't eat like me, so I understand.
On the way home, Sigourney, Iowa, because there's a couple ways to get to my dad's house. You can take the interstate and then go south when you get to Newton, or you can take Highway 1, go to 92, and then get to my dad's house. It's a lot slower, but the interstate is so busy now and dangerous.
Everything. Try going, like, I don't know how you get here. You can't go from point A to point B anywhere right now without massive construction,
yeah, yeah.
both in town and on the highway mm-hmm. and everywhere. We have now twice in a week, which for us is a lot, gone over to Coralville. And both times I have very carefully tried to pick what I thought would be the not troublesome route. Never troublesome.
So if you take that southerly route to my dad's house, you go through Sigourney, Iowa, and there's an A&W there that still makes the root beer every day with pure cane sugar.
Dang.
So this is the second time we've gone through and stopped there, and I've gotten a root beer. Oh, man, it was so good. So next time, my brother from Alaska is going to be in town the weekend after this one because he's bringing his daughter because she's going to Simpson in Indianola, I think I mentioned before. And so when we go home and go through Sigourney, I'm going to get a gallon and take it home because it is so good.
The subject of that documentary I made was born in Sigourney. That's the first time I learned about Sigourney. He was like, I was born in Sigourney. I'm like, what the hell is that? He's like, Sigourney. He's like, like Sigourney Weaver. He's like Sigourney or whatever. I was like, oh, and I had seen signs that said Sigourney. He's like, yeah, no, it's pronounced Sigourney. I was like, oh.
Well, people joke about Iowa being that way. Like, Sigourney's.
What year?
Other towns like Nevada is spelled like Nevada.
Yeah. But there's nothing special about Iowa for that. Illinois's got Marseilles.
That's a good one.
Missouri has both Cairo and Versailles. And Cape Girardeau, which I don't even know why that started life as. But, yeah, no, it's all around.
Madrid.
I still claim, yeah, Madrid's a good one. I still claim I heard people call Peru, Iowa, or Peru, Illinois, Peru.
Peru, yeah, here in Iowa, too. But there's a Peru, Iowa, and they pronounce it Peru.
My wife tells me I'm full of shit. Maybe I'm confusing it with Peru,
Iowa. Oh, yeah, I've heard it in Iowa pronounced Peru, yeah.
Yeah, that, maybe I'm mixing the two up.
But there was a guy that used to, on the radio, that used to make fun of Des Moines for Iowa for making up new ways of saying these things. But, I mean, I doubt it was on purpose. I think it's, I mean, I don't think someone said to themselves, well, we can't call this Madrid.
No, let's call it Madrid.
It just, for whatever reason, they pronounced it.
Well, and it's entirely possible that when it was founded, it was pronounced Madrid. And then over time, it altered.
Yeah. That's how linguistics works, I guess.
Nobody can entirely agree on what Des Moines actually meant
or pronounced or anything else.
Yeah. I still hear people say Des Moines. And I heard an Illinois from a nearby table the other day in a restaurant. I was shocked.
That's interesting.
An unironic Illinois.
Did I talk to you about the film The Man Who Invented Christmas? Dan Stevens is in it. He plays Charles Dickens.
I don't think so.
Okay, well,
At least I would have perked up at Dan Stevens.
He did a film called
The Man Who Invented Christmas. I heard about that five seconds ago.
Charles Dickens. And I loved it. Like, I'm probably going to buy this and watch it every Christmas kind of thing.
Oh,
I loved it
the Dickens
much.
Thing. I think I remember you talking about the Dickens thing. I guess I didn't know it was Dan Stevens.
I mean, usually when something's based on an historical person, I actually don't like it because this is a real person and you're probably showing historically inaccurate stuff. But in this one,
Dickens was an asshole, too, that complicates that.
I don't get the impression that they expect you to take it too seriously.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of stylistic, but Stevens does a great job in it, and there's a lot of... As I was watching it, and I thought it was so good, and my wife asked me, because he's writing Christmas Carol in the film. And it's kind of showing his process.
Yeah.
And my wife asked me, is that what it's like for you? And I said, yeah, it's very much like this. I mean, not exactly, because like I said, stylized, kind of over the top. But if anyone who's written a book especially, there are a lot of aspects of what they show that it kind
of
doesn't.
I want to see it. I can be like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. That's not how it works for me at all.
Well, even without that, it's very good, and he's very good in it.
We saw... a fascinating movie about a black woman at the start of the movie. I say that because it gets weird. So her sister dies, and her sister's husband die in an accident. And so she ends up taking care of their children. And then at a later point, because she's fairly young at that time, she discovers she's a man. She transitions into becoming a trans man.
Oh, okay.
But that's all still sort of the setup. And the movie is mostly about her sort of falling in love with this affluent white male and sort of their worlds not matching and, you know, the heteronormative issues and stuff. It was called Ant-Man and the Wasp.
That's good.
I spent a long time on that.
That's really good.
A lot of effort.
Yeah,
I actually came up with it back when I thought I was going to see the movie earlier, and then we didn't see it, and so I've been saving
it. Not bad.
Technically, I think it's pronounced Ant-Man and the Wasp.
So wait a minute.
The white Anglo-Saxon Protestant.
Is that your first crack at that joke in a public way?
Yeah, that's my first crack at that joke out loud.
That's good. It was very well done.
Literally the black thing just came in now. Because the problem is, in descriptive terms, without giving the game away, it's hard to get to Wasp.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't say Anglo-Saxon. And even Protestant feels like I'm cheating a little bit. So it was
hard. No, it worked. Totally worked.
Yeah. No, We did see Ant-Man and the Wasp.
And you didn't even, you didn't flub it at all.
No, I had to work hard.
Good job. Excellent job. So you saw it.
We saw Ant-Man and the Wasp.
And I saw it earlier, so.
Yeah, you had seen it. It was, like, even more so than Thor Ragnarok, it was 100% the movie I was expecting.
Oh, okay.
It was, I should, now that I've made the comparison, I should just, I fucking loved Thor Ragnarok.
Okay.
This was okay.
Yeah.
I think I liked it better than the first Ant-Man.
Oh, okay.
A little. But I didn't really care about that. Like, it was fine. I enjoyed it. It was fine. We're still trying to figure out why our suspension of disbelief is so much harder in the Ant-Man movies than in all the others. Because we're just constantly like, that's not how physics works. No. Oh, my God. Here's the thing.
I think because they cheat more.
And also because they try and explain it. Because Iron Man has a lot of bullshit science.
Yeah.
But they don't try and explain to you
just
what
happens
that is.
And, you just
and most of the rest is just it's magic or it's vibranium or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And that's fine. But this one, they really work at it. But here's the thing that bugs me. I don't know shit about quantum entanglement.
Okay.
However, science fiction talks to me about quantum entanglement a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And weirdly, science fiction is fairly consistent in what it thinks quantum entanglement is.
Yeah.
This movie was wrong about its science fiction version of quantum entanglement. Yeah. I'm like, I can't even say, like, that's not what quantum, like, that's not what the rest of the fake people agreed quantum entanglement was.
Yeah.
You fuckers.
Well.
Like, God damn it. This has become enough of a trope now. It's sort of like when you see a police procedural and you're like, that's not how the law works on police procedurals.
Yeah, right.
Because police procedurals are wrong about a lot of things, but they are consistent. There is a way that police work on TV now.
Sure.
And if you break from that, it's weird. And this is the same thing. Like, I know how sci-fi thinks quantum entanglement is, and you did it wrong.
We saw Wrinkle in Time yesterday.
Had you not seen that?
No.
Oh, okay. How'd you feel?
Well, they also had quantum entanglement mentioned. It didn't seem to have anything to do with anything else in the film. It's like, okay, well, there it gets thrown out again as this thing.
I do think somebody in Ant-Man and Wasp actually did say, do you guys just put the word quantum in front of everything? And I was like, yes, do that.
Quantum entanglement is actually a fairly easy thing to explain to a person. I mean, not to explain why or how it works, because a lot of science doesn't really know why or how. But it's just the idea that quantum particles in particular, if they make contact with each other and then they travel apart from one another, they can be entangled in such a way that when you do something to this particle, it instantaneously changes this other particle.
Yes.
Which is counterintuitive, because in every other aspect of physics, things take light speed or less to affect something from a distance.
Oh, God. You just reminded me that the movie also said the words contains enough quantum material.
Like it's something magical.
Well, and like that, no, that quantum material is a nonsense phrase.
No, that's right. That's true.
People do.
Because everything's quantum material in a way.
Quantum doesn't mean what people, I mean, I've known before, quantum doesn't mean what people think it means. But, in fact, it literally means a unit.
Yes. When scientists talk about the quantum,
that's why there's a James Bond movie called and story called A Quantum of Solace. It has nothing to do with physics.
Right. When physicists talk about the quantum realm or quantum reality, all they're really saying is that when you get to the lowest part of reality that we know of, it's got quantities, it's got discrete particles, it's quantized, they like to say. So it's
really? Somebody says quantized?
Yeah.
Not quantified?
No. Well,
wow.
and you quantize certain equations, and when you're doing
quantize sounds like something the 4-year-old came up with.
No, it's something that physicists do when they're working with certain quantum equations.
Quantize sounds like the magic word that a Saturday morning cartoon hero says before he transforms.
But it
quantize me.
It's a concept that leads physicists to basically treating everything like a particle, including forces. Like there's a particle that carries the electromagnetic force, and there's a particle that carries the gravitonic force, and things
like
that.
I prefer to treat all things like a lady, including forces and subatomic particles. Hello, strange quark. Can I get the door for you? I'm really a nice guy. Who said subatomic chivalry is dead?
But yeah, that's
cool. Like, even if you were a dude, he would talk at you like you were a lady. Hello, Belindas.
But that's all quantum entanglement is. But physicists don't know why it happens.
Yeah.
Or what it really means. Some people think, oh, that means we could use, if we had a communication device that had particles in it that are quantum entangled
with another
device.
Yeah, no, and that's most of the thing. Then we can essentially do ones and zeros across, instantaneously across unfathomable
space
dimensions. And that's what sci-fi usually uses it for.
Yeah, communication.
That's quantum entanglement is frequently faster than light communication.
But there are problems with that. There's all kinds of issues with us being able to manipulate quantum.
But luckily, we have the genetic memory in our DNA of our past lives, so we can learn from
that. What people do think you can use quantum entanglement for is quantum computers. That we could use it for that.
I know that's what I think I could use it for.
But not probably instantaneous communication from a distance. But then what people do, another thing they do in science fiction is that two people can be quantum entangled or something.
Oh, yes.
You know.
With love.
With love. That's right.
They were given up at the end in post-credit sequence. They referred to something as the healing particles. I'm like, that's not a real term. Like, they kept using it. Like, when they were, like, everything else was all very clinical experiment. Collecting healing particles. I'm like, no,
well,
that's not their name.
That's what I mean. I think it's like you say, they actually try to explain things and then break their own rules or explain them dumb.
And the constant mass is conserved, but only when you're getting smaller.
Right.
It's so annoying.
Did you saw Wrinkle in Time?
Yeah, I saw Wrinkle in Time in the theaters.
Well, maybe you talked about it.
I was supremely uncaring, but I had a strong feeling like it wasn't for me.
Yeah, I got the impression from it that...
And I also feel like it was a sign that the source material has not aged super well.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought.
And not that I found the movie problematic. I mostly found it a little boring.
Well, I wondered how much was changed from the source material, and I was surprised.
Yeah, I went and looked up, and not as much as you'd think.
Not very much.
The biggest things, and this is a plus, and this is very Ava DuVernay, is a lot of things in the movie that our protagonist did were done by some of the male characters in the books. Mm. And she was very much trying to get female empowerment, which I was all for. And I think to the right audience, which would in many cases be a young female audience, that movie could be considered awesome.
Sure, sure, sure.
But for me, it was pretty.
It made me think that I wouldn't have enjoyed the source material at all.
I still totally want to consume more Ava DuVernay stuff, but... Ant-Man and Wasp, I do have a couple things I would say. I enjoyed it. It's fine. See it. It's good. I liked it. It was fun. I laughed. There were good action scenes. There was decent chemistry, shit like that. Yeah. It was good. But two things stand out in particular. Michael Peña, and to a lesser extent, the whole ex-con crew.
Yeah.
I was very happy because, again, they were really funny. But unlike last time, not so much racist.
The first time, there
was a very... We worked really hard on sort of... Michael Peña was very much sort of a vato and shit like that. And this time, like, all of his funny bits had nothing to do with him being Hispanic. And I liked that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, when we played a little with the Russian guy, but for a couple of days afterwards, we kept going, Baba Yaga. That was fun. But like, they were still hilarious. And his recounting of things, the fact that you see it in real time was awesome.
Yeah, it was really good.
And especially just in my head, I'm just imagining the making of that section. I'm like, that must have been a blast. I'm like, there really is truth serum. Yeah, like that whole thing was really fun. Walton Goggins, I finally figured out I like him. The problem is I've spent years and years thinking I hated him, and it's because he literally only plays people that you really hate, but he's really good at it. And I finally realized it's not him, it's his characters, and he does it really well by evidence that I hate all of his characters. He's a great villain. And I have to say, Randall fucking Park. I love that man. I absolutely adore that man. And he's up and coming, but he's often given parts that I'm like, he did fine, but so could a bag of rice or, you know, a play doll or whatever. Sorry, bag of rice was weirdly racist, as I didn't mean it. I was trying to think of an inanimate object. I apologize. But this, he nailed this, and he walked a line with his character. He's the FBI agent who's in charge of Paul Rudd's house arrest.
Yeah.
He walked that brilliant line of comic relief, but I still believed he was an FBI agent.
Sure, sure.
Like, he wasn't just a complete goof, but, like, he did such a great job, and I genuinely believe other people would not have done as well. And I love seeing him finally get cast in stuff like that. And again, nothing to do with his raids. It was just him being him, and he was great. I loved him.
Yeah.
You know how at school you're not allowed to color on the walls? Where your daddy went with Captain America to Germany and colored all over Sokovia. I will say, I don't know if it meant to or not, but the movie has taught me a couple things that Hank Pym, especially, and Scott Lang, Paul Rudd's character, aren't really good guys. Paul Rudd's especially, because his daughter was really harping on how her dad helps people. And I'm like, does he really, though? Think back to literally everything Ant-Man has done.
Yeah.
It's either been for friends of his or loved ones, mm-hmm. or cleaning up fallout that was the result of him or occasionally Hank.
Yeah.
Like, he hasn't really saved a lot of people.
Yeah, I guess.
So, I find that weird. And yeah, Hank Pym's just a bastard. And weirdly, for a second it looked like we were going to make him a bad guy, and then we had a one-sentence throwaway from an incredibly unreliable narrator, as though that cleaned it up. And I'm like, he still might be a villain. Like, I don't even know. But no, I had a lot of fun with it. Two post-credit sequences. As usual, the mid-credit sequence is the important one, and the end-credit sequence is the funny one. That's been going on for a while now.
Have you been following the deal where... Is it James Gunn?
James Gunn.
Was fired from...
Yeah, yeah.
What are your thoughts on it?
It sucks. I think Disney has overcompensated. Okay, let's back it up for people who aren't as pop culture obsessed as I am. So, James Gunn. For those of you who don't know James Gunn, yes, you do. James Gunn wrote and directed Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and Guardians of the Galaxy 2. For those of you who only know James Gunn from there, James Gunn was around a long time before that in very small time things. He came up in a small studio known as Troma, which still exists, which makes and distributes exclusively fucked up shit. Exclusively weird, gory, schlocky, poorly made, offensive shit. And he actually made what is considered one of their classics, Tromeo and Juliet. And it's very... The Toxic Avenger also came out of Troma. They... their whole thing is, look how fucked up this is. with really low budgets and terrible acting and all sorts of violence and sex and all sorts of things. And he also has done other movies. He did a movie called Super, where Rainn Wilson played a superhero, like, in real life. He's done a couple... He did a thing called The Specials that was along that line. And it was all very edgy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very much who he was back then.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, he tweeted some shit that he thought was funny at the time, but was mostly shock humor, and I think involved pedophilia and other stuff like that. I didn't see the specific tweets because I don't give a damn.
I did see them. They were.
I don't remember if he deleted them or not. They were from 10 years ago. He definitely apologized for them at some point and said, like, I was younger then, I was stupid, sorry. I think maybe he didn't delete them because he's like, that's a cop-out, it happened, whatever. Anyway, it was very much water under the bridge. Everyone, like, nobody was out there like, James Gunn, fuck that guy. Did you see what he tweeted? Nobody was in that place. However, some notorious white right-wing trolls, I'm just going to say, a gentleman by the name of Mike Cernovich, I forget the other guy's name, but some guys who are just out there to stir up trouble on the internet and piss people off, dug up this and started essentially a fake campaign saying, if you're going to fire Roseanne for her racist tweet, you have to fire James Gunn for this stuff. And Disney was like, yep, fair is fair. James Gunn, you're fired. And to his credit, James Gunn's response was, we knew these were out there. I talked about these. These were 10 years ago. I'm not that person. But it's a business decision that I understand. I'm sad. But that's how it is. Other people, including basically the entire cast of Guardians, were like, we don't like this. This is not fair. And Dave Bautista, in particular, is pissed off at Disney.
He has said he would not do it. Well, I think he said he would, if they keep the script, he'll do it. But then I'm not sure.
Well, and it's weird because, yeah, they're all pissed, but not pissed off enough to break contract.
Yeah, yeah.
He has definitely said he's going to do what he's legally obligated to do, and then he's done with Disney off of this. And others, I mean, you know, there's a lot of big stars, and so they're not and here's the thing. You don't have to throw yourself on the sword for James Gunn, because every other filmmaking company and TV-making company out there is like, what? He's available now? Awesome. Here's a bunch of money.
Yeah, he's not going to have a problem finding
it. Not at all. And then there was some back and forth of like, maybe this won't happen, maybe this won't not. And, but now it's like official. They had another meeting and he's definitely not coming back.
Right, yeah.
So it's done. I'm sad. It might affect if I see the third Guardians. I really like the first two, but I think I very like the first two because of him. And it'll be post the watershed. It'll be post Avengers 4, so I now no longer obligate myself to give a damn after that.
Okay.
So we'll have to see. I understand what Disney is thinking. And I certainly don't think any of this is a moral position. I don't consider Disney to be moral. They didn't get rid of Roseanne because they were like, she said what?
Yeah.
They got rid of her because they're like, oh my God, everybody's pissed at this. We can't keep employing her.
Right.
And they made the same call here. I think they are wrong about this because I think it was transparently a small group of people digging up very old material. Because that's the thing is, Roseanne tweeted what she tweeted and everybody was like, fuck you, Roseanne. But nobody was going around saying, fuck you, James Gunn.
Not that I know of.
And these guys appear to. And so I really almost want to have a conversation with these guys. I'm like, so you genuinely think because of that stuff he said, he should be fired? And they'd probably say, no, it's just if you're going to fire Roseanne. I was like, okay, so you think Roseanne shouldn't have been fired? Like, there's no way that this makes any good sense. If you think Roseanne should have been fired, but you want to get even, that's dumb. And if you don't think Roseanne should be fired, why would firing a different guy make that better. Like, the thing shit, but this is also, I mean, this is coming from a man who said there's no such thing as date rape and just all sorts of terrible shit. So, fuck those guys. So, I'm a little sad because, like I said, it may impact me seeing Guardians, but James Gunn will be fine. The movie will be fine. Disney will be fine. Dave Bautista will be fine. Like, everybody will be fine. It's just dumb as shit. Oh, God. We got to do a question, but I need to talk about it. No, I'll talk about it next week. I got two things I got to talk about next week.
Okay.
About a book and about a movie.
Okay. A book and a movie.
Well, some books and a movie. What you got?
Jazz. What are the advantages / disadvantages of comedy over other types of storytelling?
Somebody's been watching Nanette. You guys watched Nanette, right?
Yeah, we did.
I guarantee you that's where this idea popped in her head. Jazz may not even know that, but this is where this idea popped into her head. And it's funny, this is where the idea popped into my head as well, because I'm a big fan of comedy. But as Hannah Gadsby talked... Can we talk about Hannah Gadsby for a second? Because things are happening there.
Sure.
So, you know, she had her special, which if you haven't seen it yet, watch Nanette. You need to be prepared. There's some emotionally tough stuff in it, but it's also really funny and really well crafted, and I think very important. Would you agree?
Yes, I would.
All right. You had that glazed over look that I'm like, maybe he has a different opinion.
No, I'm sorry. I'm thinking about this.
And in that, part of the thing in that is that she was planning to quit comedy because she didn't feel like comedy could properly express what she had to say.
Right.
To put it glibly.
Sure.
Since then, of course, she blew up.
Oh, okay.
Like, this has made her hugely famous. She's on all the talk shows and everything like that.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. And, in fact, initially, people were like, now you're really huge. Are you still going to quit? And she's like, I think I have to. This is not how it's going to work. She's reconsidering.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, she's writing a book.
Yeah.
Called 10 Steps to Nanette, I believe. That's how she came about that I'm very interested in.
Sure.
And a lot of other people I know are too. But she is reconsidering. And basically, she's like, I would be a hypocrite to not quit comedy now. But if I did quit comedy now, I would kind of be an idiot. Because this is such a big thing, and I have this platform now and all this sort of thing. And she's like, I'm starting to think I probably would rather be a hypocrite than an idiot. And, of course, to me, the other argument is the fact that this did blow up so much means that there is an audience out there wider and more receptive to what she has to say than she may have necessarily realized.
Right.
And somebody, when talking about this stuff, in one of the articles I read, referred to this as the possible future of what comedy specials may look like. And I could definitely see that becoming a thing. Because more and more people are trying to inject some real truth into, I mean, comedy always comes from truth. Well, usually comes from truth. But more and more people are trying to, when you get the Mike Birbiglia stuff, he's been doing a bunch of things where he basically workshops comedy, and that's based on actual episodes in his life, and turns them into sort of one-man shows, and then Ira Glass mostly has been turning those into movies.
Mm.
Sleepwalk With Me was his first one, and I think he had one later called My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. I don't know. I haven't followed all of them, but he's done where he stars in them and things like that, and they are absolutely funny and also very sad and very real in a lot of ways. And I think this is becoming a thing, and I'm in general in favor. And, of course, Tig Notaro, famous now for doing that with that set Live, where she found out she had cancer just before she went on. And I do think that is sort of becoming, I mean, you know, just funny stuff will never go away. But I think this is becoming more of a thing. And it's been going back a long way. Do you ever see any John Leguizamo's one-man shows? John Leguizamo's stand-up, his one-man shows are kind of cool. Because they're very much his life, and a lot of it's funny, and some of it gets very serious, and he does a lot of impressions, some of which are for comedic effect, and some of which seem to very much come from the heart of, like, doing impressions of people in his life and what they mean. And I mean, I've had moments that were tearjerkers in watching his stuff, and he's done a few of these. He sort of has figured out he's not quite actor, he's not quite comedian, so he's sort of doing, I mean, now he's got more acting gigs, but... he's done a lot of that. And I like that style. So I think this is going to come up a lot more. But yeah, in Nanette, it brings up the concept that comedy is limiting because there's sort of a format to it, and you have to end in the right spot when you're talking about something. Sometimes there's an epilogue to something that's not funny. And so then you sort of have to cut up the truth in the way. And I've totally lost the thread of what the question was. What was the question again? Help me out with this.
Advantages and disadvantages of comedy over other types.
One of the huge advantages, of course, is it's quite disarming to people. I think good comedy. Because people want to laugh.
Do you think that opens people up to thinking about things in a different way?
I think it can. It has for me.
Yeah.
There have been things where I've had to hear truths that I was not super comfortable with, but they said it in a way that I was like, okay, that's a good point. Whereas if it had been told in more just like straightforward fashion or dramatic fashion or whatever, I wouldn't. It's a little weird because I also am starting to feel like comedy is one of those things like love that we should stop believing it's so discreet. Because there's a lot of stuff that's comedy that I don't think is funny. And there's a lot of stuff that's not comedy that I think is hilarious. And then there's comedy that I like that makes me laugh. And then there's comedy that I like that I don't laugh for a second, but I'm just like, that's good comedy. Like, there's so many different ranges. And there's bits in things that aren't intended to be comedy. And I don't mean like flub-ups or anything, but like dramatic things. But they're just sort of moments that I find humor in and things like that. I feel like it's not nearly as discreet as we like to call it.
Well, I think I think all of the most effective stories, the stories that are possibly going to change a person's life, or they'll remember their whole life, or it's a story they'll talk about remembering when they heard it because it changed their life. I think all the most effective stories is going to have some humor in it somewhere. I just think humor is an element of good storytelling in general. Now,
well, it's a release of tension, somebody named Hannah Gatsby said.
As long as it's in the right place, because one big complaint about a lot of modern filmmaking storytelling, like with Marvel movies, is that they inject humor right at a part that's supposed to have a lot of emotional weight. You should let the audience feel it.
That cuts tension where you wanted tension.
No, yeah, you needed tension there, and then you just ruined it. But that's just the role of humor in storytelling in general. But where the point seems to be humor, and that's what we call comedy these days. Like you said, if there's a point you're trying to drive home, it can be really effective in, like you say, disarming the person, preparing them for it. But most of the time, comedy is just kind of for comedy's sake. Like I hardly ever watch comedy movies, but we saw Game Night recently.
Oh, yeah. I've been very curious about that. We didn't see Game Night and instead saw Cock Blockers, and I feel like we probably made the wrong choice.
Again, I don't really get into comedy movies. The only reason I decided to watch it was because I'm kind of a Jason Bateman fan now.
Yeah. Sorry, go on.
Well, and he played the usual character that he does, but he's so good at it, it's kind of fun.
Yeah, ever since that New York Times piece, I don't like him as well.
It wasn't bad.
Yeah.
But it's not like a typical comedy, and I don't usually like them, so I don't even know I could recommend
almost
it.
Every YouTube video I show you, you laugh quite heartily.
Most of the YouTube videos you show me, though, are a lot of them are critiques, but they're done in a humorous way.
Yeah.
Which I like. But like a comedy movie,
it's a different thing. I'm a little with you. As I get older, I am less into comedic films per se.
Or even sitcoms.
I'm more into like stand up or something like that, or comedic comedy that just comes out of discussion or something like that.
Yes, yes.
I'm a little with you on that.
Panel shows when you're talking about? I could get into a panel show, sure. I don't watch them, but I could watch one and enjoy it. But I think comedy has been like for like late night shows and things right now. And this is actually this has been going on for a long time. Trevor Noah hosts it now, but
Daily Show.
Daily Show. Even when Stephen Colbert and The Daily Show were on, there were some critiques about all of that. And the critique was, people are watching this and they're laughing. And maybe they're even being outraged sometimes by the political realities that are being revealed, but they're not doing anything about it.
Yeah.
So what the advantage is, people are being educated and they're responding emotionally to the comedy, and they're being informed, and that's good, and they're remembering what they're being told, and that's good, but because it's presented in this comedic form, there's almost it's almost like
we all laughed about it, now let's move on.
Yeah, almost like there's nothing else we can do but laugh about it and move on, right? And
although I'm not sure that's entirely comedy's fault, because there are also versions of a similar thing where people are deadly serious on their TV shows and they tell you about the horrible things that's happening and you're like, that's terrible, that's awful. And then you stop watching it and you move on and don't do anything.
And because it's a similar thing where it's presented in a way that brings some kind of emotional response that's taken by the viewer as good enough.
Cathartic.
Yeah. That's right.
So these things are good psychologically, but not necessarily sociologically or politically.
Right. Now, John Oliver challenged that
well,
with some of the stuff he was doing.
But he does it in a very straightforward way.
Yeah.
Because he basically gives you something that's very similar to The Daily Show in terms of the humor level and all that. But at the end, he almost always has specific recommendations of specific action.
Yeah.
And I do appreciate that. He still bugs me because he'll be talking about stuff and he'll make some joke that I'm like, that was a cheap, shitty joke. Like, I get tired. Well, and the prime example is I get tired of jokes about how ugly Donald Trump is. Donald Trump is ugly as hell. Like, physically, he's a very unattractive person. He does not dress well. He has weird-looking facial things. His hair is a disaster. I don't give a fuck. If he was a good person and a good president, that would be fine. And there are so many things we can bitch about and make fun of about him without touching any of that. Let's stop doing that.
Yeah.
Because it makes us look, it undermines our argument. You can make jokes about legitimate shit he's doing, and you're like, and it's funny because it's true. But if you focus on his hands or his hair or whatever, it's very easy then to write it off. It's like, oh, okay.
Well,
yeah,
and also
he looks funny.
It also perpetuates our culture's obsession with how
people
look.
Yeah, it's also shitty in a lot of other reasons. Yeah. But although that position I have made it really funny the one time when Michelle Wolf was talking about when Mario Batali, it finally came out that he was a scuzzy sexual predator, like so many other things. She's like, I'm just so excited because I can finally make fun of his parents because I've been waiting forever. And I was like, I kind of appreciate that because, I mean, I appreciate where that joke comes from. I don't want her to do that.
Right, right.
But he has so many features that everybody would have been making fun of forever if it weren't for the fact that everybody loved Mario Batali. So there is sort of this facet of like, yeah, now apparently it's fair game. And that was a funny joke. All her follow-up jokes I didn't find funny because I don't give a fuck. And also because he looks disconcertingly like me. Although he does wear Crocs, and there's nothing, you can't forgive somebody for wearing Crocs. So.
I'm not sure I know who you're talking about now as you're talking
He's a celebrity chef, large man, red hair, beard, ponytail, wears Crocs.
I don't think I know who that is. You think he looks like you?
I'm a large man. I guess I don't have the ponytail anymore.
No.
Large people with beards. Large white guys with beards.
Are you saying that some people say they all look alike?
Yes. I'm saying I say that. But yeah, I do. I mean, I love comedy for what it can do. It's stuck in me. I can't not be comedic. But it has its limitations because it's good for what it is. And there sometimes you have to be serious. And I have problems with that. Humor is also one of my prime defense mechanisms.
Well,
so
one thing I've talked about for years is satire. You know, how satire is a double-edged sword, right?
Oh, yeah.
And Archie Bunker is a perfect example. You had half the country laughing at him because he was a bigot, and half the bigots of the country was bigots laughing at him because they agreed with everything he said.
Well,
so how much good did that do?
Okay, then satire now has to be a triple-edged sword, because there's also a brand of satire where it's just like, I'm going to be horrible, but I say, no, I'm satirizing that thing. A prime example is everything Mark Millar has ever done.
I don't know.
Comic book guy. He's responsible for Kick-Ass and Kick-Ass 2. Wow. And almost everything Zack Snyder's done, but especially Sucker Punch.
Yeah.
Sucker Punch is fucked up in so many ways. And Zack Snyder's response is, no, it's a satire of all of those things that you say are fucked up. People do that a lot.
Yeah.
They're like, no, I just call those black people the N-word because I was satirizing actual racists.
Yeah.
And it's, and this is the thing, I've noticed because I recently, I listened to, probably for the last time, some shit from Anthony Jeselnik, who's a comedian. He's a very handsome white man, dresses very well, and his whole shtick is that he's very calm, overconfident, arrogant jerk. And he speaks very well, and he says the most horrible things. And he's, again, one of those guys whose whole deal is that he does not believe there's anything that can't be made fun of. And that's his whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
And he does have a problem in that some of his fans are, like you say, who are bigots laughing because they think he's right.
Yeah,
and he is sort of horrified by those. But I'm like, you're quickly hitting the point where, do you really think it's a good thing? Like, just because you know those people are wrong, they're still buying your album, and then you're still helping them perpetuate their beliefs.
And you're making money off of that, too.
Yeah, and I'm also just sick of all these guys. It's always white guys wanting to prove there's nothing you can't make fun of. I do think it's funny, though. We're running a little over time, but I want to say this. I recently read an article off of Crack that was basically making fun of several prominent, or the most things you can come up close to prominent, conservative comedians. And also sort of putting forth the argument that conservative comedy is sort of can't be done very well. Because of the nature of... Dennis Miller is probably the most obvious example.
Yeah, I suppose.
But there's also smaller temple, and there's this one comedian they were talking about, and he's very big on all the outrage. PC culture has gotten out of control. You can't hardly say anything anymore without somebody getting offended. He's very big on the war on Christmas and all that shit, and he makes jokes about it. But the author in question was like, if you think you can't say anything as a joke anymore because people will get offended, you need to keep believing that. It's wrong. In this country, you can say any damn thing you want if people think it's funny, which is absolutely true.
That is true.
If it's, there is shit people have said that I'm like, that offends me. And other people have made jokes that part of my brain is like, that is the same offensive shit. I'm like, yeah, but that one was funny. Or as Harry Shearer said, it depends on level. Like, you can make a joke about a mother-in-law and it can be pretty mediocre. If you're making a joke about the Holocaust, it better be a damn good joke. But he's like, if you can't tell that, you're clearly not good enough at making jokes, so you should just continue to assume that you can't say those things without offending people. And I was like, that is really true. We all care about a lot of stuff. When it comes to comedy, if it's funny enough, we will let you cross any damn line.
I think that's true, and I also think, I said earlier,
but it has to be funny. It can't be transgressive for the sake of being transgressive.
Right, right. I said earlier that I didn't know there was such a thing as conservative comedians, but I don't think there's, I never thought there was such a thing as liberal comedians either. It's like, comedians are just comedians. I mean, I know they are conservative or liberal,
yeah.
But when you're telling jokes, you, everything's game pretty much.
But in a lot of cases, you will find comedians, if you look at all the people out there and the jokes that are made that are about political viewpoints,
yeah,
they're almost all about conservative viewpoints.
Really?
Yeah, there aren't a whole bunch of jokes about liberals, except kind of lame cliched ones that don't sort of mean anything or anything. But you will constantly get great ones like saying all lives matter when somebody says black lives matter is like, if your girlfriend says to you, do you love me? And you're like, baby, I love all people. That's a good joke.
Yeah, it is a good joke.
All right. Yeah, we are over time, so that's going to be it for now. So wait a week, and we'll be back, and you'll be back. But for us, it will not have been very long at all. So, and hopefully I won't break nothing this time. So hopefully we'll talk to you again in 10 minutes slash a week.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.